Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday. And okay, there we go. No, it did not unmute my sister. I'm sorry, sis. It kind of locked up on me. You there? Oh, hello? Ah, I forgot we are in Mercury retrograde shadow.
There we go.
There you are. There's my lovely sister. How are you?
You just unmuted me. This is Raina Starr. Hi, everybody. we're actually in the post shadow of retrograde, but that doesn't mean stuff doesn't still happen. So,
yeah.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Desperate House Witches. Yes, it did unmute me.
Good.
So, Desperate House Witches is not a PG, a G, an R, or even an X-rated show. So, if bodily functions, dirty talk, bad language, anything else I might say might offend you, this is probably not the show for you. But if you don't care about that, we're all good. And Desperate House Witches is brought to you by the one, the only, the incredible one, the wicked one herself, the lovely, delightful Dorothy Morrison from www.wickedwitchstudios.com, purveyor of all of your fine pagan needs, creatrix of the most divine pagan products. Go check it out. And if you need those wonderful goods shipped internationally, check out www.theangrycauldron.com. They do the international shipping for Wicked Witch Studios, which is Dorothy Morrison's product. Fantastic stuff. Okay, so welcome to post-Mercury retrograde. This one was kicking my tits. I'm exhausted. The weather has been shit. It's been alternately colder, and then warm. I don't get it. It is what they call the perfect pneumonia weather. It's been really crazy. I've had a migraine pretty much all afternoon, stretching into this evening. So I apologize in advance if I seem a little low energy. So I don't know if anybody else has noticed this on Facebook, but apparently, for some random reason, you can be named as somebody's top fan. And I get a lot of these. I mean, I get a lot of these. And my feeling is that if I am your top fan, I want a prize. So I'm going to say to the following people, I want a cookie. Judica Illis, I want a cookie. Matt Oren, I want a cookie. Cindy Brannon, I want a cookie. So y'all owe me a cookie because I'm a top fan. And as a top fan, I want a cookie. Damn it. So anyway, yes. I frequent pages a lot. I try to promote folks as much as possible. I want a fucking cookie because I deserve a fucking cookie.
I'm going to get you some of those s'mores cookies.
Holy shit.
Those things are fucking amazeballs.
Anybody who has Publix nearby, I am going to tell you that Publix makes a s'mores cookie. I don't know what's in it. I don't care what's in it. You can tell me old man testicles are in it. I'm still buying them. They're delicious. They're fabulous cookies. Yummy, yummy. Oh, my goodness. So, okay, next week is Thanksgiving. Very excited. It is the season where the cooking commences and doesn't stop until the third day of January. So,
yes.
Happy Feastivus. For the rest of us. Holy shit. Do you want to hear the list of what I
yes.
have to make?
Because okay. Did you finish the shopping?
No. What, are you kidding? Okay. No, not at all. Not even close. I have a four-page. No. Oh, don't even misunderstand. I have a five-page shopping list.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, here goes the shopping list. Brussels sprouts. Special K with chocolate. That is not for me. That is for my child. I have to get coffee, not just coffee for cold brew. I have plenty of that. But certain people in my home require coffee hot brew, and we are getting the Lavazza, which we had at the hotel at Mystic South. Speaking of Mystic South, get it on your calendars, people. Mystic South is coming. It is, I think, the 16th, 17th, and 18th, or 17th, 18th, and 19th of July, this coming July, at the DoubleTree perimeter in Atlanta, Georgia. Do not forget, there's some amazing people. Our wonderful David Salisbury is a headliner. Nadja Lightfoot is a headliner. Our very own Thorne Mooney is a headliner. So excited. Tuatha Dia will be playing again.
Yes.
Love that. Yeah, it's rocking. It's already rocking, and it's not even 2020 yet. So get it in your calendars. Call, get your room booked. I did this weeks ago already. The minute it was announced, we got in there. We reserved our rooms. We've got it going. We are going to be there. We want to see all of you there. It is a fantastic, fantastic convention. It is the only one on this side of the Southeast. It is a great time, and I'm very excited as always. We're in a new hotel this coming year. It's going to be fabulous. It's lots of learning, lots of fellowship and love and fun. And learning shit and hanging out and meeting people that you haven't met before. So it's really cool. So anyway.
I wonder
yes,
how hard Star would roll her eyes at me if I went around in like a flapper's dress. Because I'm planning on doing this next year, at least incorporating quite a bit. But, you know, the 20s were not a great decade, but the fashion was kick ass. And I really want to bring that back.
You're alone.
I figured.
Sorry, kid.
I'm like,
you're alone.
Okay, how hard is everybody going to laugh at me if I do this? But I really want to.
Pretty fucking hard.
Pretty hard. Yeah, I think I may take it.
Okay.
I don't know.
You go right the fuck ahead. Anyway, there's a costume. There's usually a costume party, so it's completely appropriate, I would assume.
Well, there we go. Maybe
you
I'll keep it down to a minimum.
Whatever that means.
Yeah, no, I don't think I can.
Right, exactly. Moving right along. So how many people are you cooking for? What's your situation for the holiday? Are you casting a spell on your food? I'm casting a spell on mine. I'm being very upfront about this.
That's awesome.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I definitely believe in the ability to cast magic through cooking.
Oh,
and,
definitely.
And I don't think I think about it enough or do it often enough. So I think, and only good, you know, only good shit. I'm not, you know, this is not a control thing or a I want you to do this type of thing. It's more of a, you know, bringing love and light and happiness. I mean, it doesn't always work out that way, but fuck it, I'll give it a try, right? So, yeah. more magical cooking, definitely. You know, and it's funny because I really need to figure out the corresponding meanings between spices and what they're good for from a magical standpoint, because I have an entire cabinet full, like three shelves full of nothing but spices. It's insane. I had no idea I had this much shit. It's not to be believed. I don't know what to do. It's out of control. I can't find certain things that I know are in the cabinet because the cabinet's that big and that many layers. It's like, I guess I should organize them by you know, spice mixes and maybe by country, but, you know, smoked paprika is from more than one place, so do I put it under S for Spain, or do I put it under H for Hungary, or, you know, I mean, I need help. I need organizational help.
You know, what I find easiest is just me personally, you know, having them alphabetized, which I don't always do, and it usually falls apart fairly quickly. But
I know.
If I keep the savory herbs on one side, and it usually winds up the ones I use most are in the front. And then I put, like, you know, the spices and whatnot, like the cinnamons and sweet stuff, the baking stuff, on the other side. You know,
yeah, that's not going to work, because that's, I mean, the spices and the, between the sweet and the savory, they have overrun three shelves. It's insane.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's really, like, three different types of vanilla. We have vanilla paste. We have Madagascar vanilla. We have a different type of vanilla, like a bourbon vanilla. I mean, there's like, I've got all this shit. I've got six different types of sugar. I'm like, what the fuck was I thinking? And forget it when it comes to salt. When it comes to salt, I don't know how many different types I have. I gave up after 10. I'm like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I've got two different types of kosher salt, four different types of sea salt. I can't find the table salt, which is what I actually need to make these fucking cookies that I'm expected to make next week. I'm like, how did this happen? How did this happen? How did I get so out of control? I mean, really. Oh, and then I put my new altar together in the house, and I love it. It's big enough to support all my crap. Yeah, I shouldn't say crap. I mean, everything on my altar means something to me, obviously. Otherwise, it would be there.
Yeah.
But, wow. I could outfit another three altars with my stuff. So I'm guessing it's time to, like, get rid of some of this stuff, you know. I mean, well, some of it doesn't serve anymore, I guess. I don't know, but I'm very sentimentally attached to, you know, like my sugar skulls and my, you know, because it's a, how many tiers are on this thing? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So, I mean, and the fun thing about this altar, because it's built like a ladder and it's got all these different shelves, it's like, you know how during certain holidays you have certain altars, like an ancestor altar and your, you know, your normal everyday altar. Well, I get to have them all out all the time because they're all layered. So it's kind of like, great.
That's
give her too
cool,
many
though.
Damn options. I don't know. I like it, but other people would probably, well, I guess it doesn't matter what other people think. Not that anybody ever comes to, like, look at my altar. Although I am having company from out of town multiple times next year. I'm very excited. A lot of people are coming to visit. So, there'll be a lot of people in and out of here. It's going to be interesting.
though.
Yeah. So I'm definitely, I mean, my shopping list is frightening. Like, frightening. you know what? That's the best part about being a witch. Make shit manifest. Manifest
pretty
the
much.
Money to buy everything on this freaking list. Did I tell you I still don't know how many people I'm cooking for? No clue.
No. I thought it was settled at 9.
No.
No?
Could be
oh,
more,
my God.
Less. Yeah, no idea.
Wow.
No clue. So far, I can tell you with most certainty that there are 5 people. No, 1, 2, 3, 4 people that are 100%, 100%. And I don't
wow.
know about anybody else. Yeah. So I bought 7 hens. 7.
Oh, my God. 7.
I know.
Yeah,
7.
Feed a small army.
Or a mid-sized one, because that's, okay, so I'm figuring 4 trays of dressing, the sausage apple dressing, and
so good.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot, so if you want some, it will be here.
I'm just going to tell my husband, just drop me off at my sister's place.
Okay.
I'll see y'all later.
That'll work. That's fine.
Cool.
You want to come? You're welcome. Come on.
Aww.
But, yeah. So,
I love you.
Oh, of course. I love you, too. But, yeah, so it's like, going to be insane with food. I have to make, like, 3 batches of pumpkin cookies. I have to make 2 batches of candy. Yeah, remember the candy I used to make a million years ago? I had a special request for more candy. Yeah, so now I got to make candy. So actually, I think I have certainty that at least 6 people will be here, maybe 7. I'm not sure if everybody's staying for dinner, but I will tell you that the stuffing, the amount of stuffing that will be here, all of our listeners could show up and get some. It's crazy.
It's worth it.
Yeah.
If you guys want to drive, it is so good.
It's really good. It's sausage apple stuffing. My ex-brother-in-law taught me how to make it. Bless his heart. And, so that plus mushy peas and rice. Oh,
ooh.
Girl, I've been making some mushy peas. Oh, oh, oh.
Yes.
So good.
I've never
it's
had
really
your
good.
Mushy peas.
My mushy peas are delightful. We had it for dinner tonight.
Oh, I don't doubt that. Huh?
And we're having Brussels sprouts. We're actually, believe it or not, in the midst of all of this Americana, we are having caprese salad.
Oh.
I know. Yeah. It's just a lot of food. So I figure because, you know, I took off Wednesday, that Tuesday night cooking will actually commence. Now, normally, for most people, Thanksgiving is a very set thing, very easy. You know exactly what you're doing, and that's it. For me, Christmas is the easiest because I put up a sauce the night before, and by the time everybody shows up, sauce is ready to eat. That's simple stuff. I like it simple. So the cooking is insane. I have to ask tonight's guests about the offering on my altar of alcohol. I have a glass of really nice rum.
Ooh.
And I have a glass of the Glenlivet. Because for some reason, my God's like 15-year-old scotch. Because they're picky like that. At this moment, they seem to be going after both things almost neck and neck. maybe more on the scotch. They seem to like the scotch a lot, but I will tell you that the scotch is not cheap, and the rum is like half the price of the scotch. So I'm kind of like, guys, you know, you've got a really expensive habit here. So, I'm wondering if it's okay to, like, you know, should I be keeping the Glenlivet to special occasions, or, you know, what am I doing here with all this alcohol? I don't even drink this shit. I buy it for them. So,
that's,
I don't know.
That's Glenlivet ain't cheap.
No doubt. No doubt. And I mean, listen, I believe in the value of good offerings. I really do. I see that it makes a difference. But guys, that's a lot. Because, you know, it's not like
dry.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I put out a fresh glass, and within a week, it's like, more please. Okay, those glasses add up.
Anytime I put alcohol as an offering, I've always done it like just a little bit in a shot glass. You know.
Yeah.
And, I can't afford
your gods
good...
don't drink like mine do.
My
gods are luscious. I don't know what your guys are doing, but mine are like, bring on the booze, please. But shit. I've got two glasses, you know, and they don't like, and it's got to be hard stuff. There is no, oh, give them some wine. They did not like any kind of wine that I gave them. They're like, oh, no. Don't be cheap, bitch. Give us the good shit. So... yeah. I wonder if anybody else is going through this too, because I would like to know, you know, what offerings other people are putting out and if they're having any issues with the offerings that they're putting out, because I'll tell you what, wine, salt, earth, incense, not enough, not on mine. I mean, probably on everybody else's. My God, you're spoiled. That's the problem.
You set the precedent.
Jeez.
And now we're like,
Yeah. Man, once you give them a taste of the good shit, they don't want to hear anything else. It's like, no. Can't go back
now. I know where
now.
You hide that good shit.
I'm telling you. Unbelievable. So, yeah, amongst my purchases for upcoming Yule, another bottle of Glenlivet. Thank you so much. And another bottle of the, it's called Drum. I can't remember the other name of it. But this rum. Have you ever heard of this rum?
It sounds familiar, but I don't think I've ever seen it and definitely not tasted it.
It's very, very caramelly rum.
Ooh.
I mean, you can smell it, and it's really, according to people who drink rum, it's delicious. And I'm like, it all tastes like paint thinner to me, so I can't really tell. But because I mean, I used to drink. I don't drink anymore, so you know, I don't get it. But yeah, so I don't know. Anyway.
Well, they like it.
They do. So what's going on with you? What you making?
I am definitely making a batch of gingerbread pudding cake, doubling up on it.
Gingerbread pudding cake that my sister likes to make. Yeah, you know, my sister's gingerbread pudding cake has apparently become the stuff of legends. We actually had some folks ask us to put her recipe up on our show page. So if you want to know how to make gingerbread pudding cake, definitely check it out. It is posted on the page. and let us know how you like it. Let us know if you made it, because I'm curious. I want to know if people are making it.
Yeah. I know, definitely.
So.
It's a lot of steps, but it's so worth it. It seems more complicated than it actually is. You know, if you set everything up and, you know, measure everything out in advance, everything goes smoothly.
That's a lot to measure. I mean, that's a big recipe.
Yeah, it is. But it's worth it.
It is. If it turns out well, you will have made a masterpiece. Like I said, I my sister's is the best, but I am certainly willing to be a test subject for those of you who are local. I have no problem and would be most happy to assist if you should need somebody to tell you if your batches are good or not. I would make that sacrifice for you, our listeners.
Hey! Me too.
Well, considering you're the one who makes it, you're probably the best judge of whether or not it's good. But being an expert on eating it, I feel equally qualified.
I was going to say, you know, but I mean, hey, make it your own way. You know, if you want to add a little bit more of this, a little bit more of that, you know, go for it. Make it how you like it. But, we have a guest in the queue. Would you like to bring them on?
Yes, please.
All right. Hello.
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 Hi.
Hello. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, joining us this evening, Christopher Oropello and Tara Love McGuire. Do you have Tara with you yet?
Hello.
Yes.
Hi.
You can hear her, right?
Hi.
Awesome. I'm just making sure I couldn't for a minute, but now I can. Hi there. I'm so happy you're with us tonight. How are you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing well. We're happy to be here.
Right on. So, I do have to say, I have questions. I mean, we're going to discuss your book.
That's a good thing that we're
see, you guys are new to our show. This is not a typical interview show like you're used to. This is our hangout show. Yeah, we kind of just like roll with it. I mean, we definitely want to talk about the book, but being an old witch, I like stories, and I want to know all about how you guys met. So I want to talk about that too, because I'm just that kind of girl. I like romance. I want to know. I want the details. Tell me everything.
Oh, wow. So really, you want to hear how we met?
Can you start there?
Yeah.
Start there, sure. I love stories.
Sorry, no, we
were
also
adjusting
chairs.
I like love.
I don't know. Do you want to tell the story?
I'll do it.
You'll tell
I'm
the story?
Always the one who has to do it.
Okay.
So back in 2001, I had recently had to move back home to New Jersey. I'd been living in Philadelphia for almost 10 years, and I torpedoed my life over there and moved back home to lick my wounds and figure out what I wanted to do when I grew up. And I started working at a mortgage company because I needed a big girl job. And in that department, there was this woman who we used to go out on cigarette breaks together. This was back when I still smoked. And I just looked like a freak. Like, I was just full gothy pants back then. And so she kind of cottoned on that I was very open to her being Wiccan. And she did, like, the whole, like, showed me the pentacle out of her shirt and, like, oh, so you can just let me know if this, like, falls out of my shirt one day so the people don't know. I'm like, all right, cool. I'm cool. We began to be friends, and she told me that she was part of this one discussion group that met every Sunday at the local Borders Cafe called the Marlton Witches Coalition, and that the gentleman who ran that, she felt that he and I would be would be really good friends, because at the time I was in a relationship, and which is a whole other story unto itself. But so she thought he and I would be friends, and then he and I wound up talking, and then didn't stop talking, and that just continued from there. Like, we met through her, and like, we don't even talk to her anymore. And like, that group is broken up. And, and so that was 2001 is when we met. And then we got married last year in 2018.
Wait, congratulations.
You skipped a whole bunch of stuff. Wait a second. She just rushed right through all that shit, didn't give me any of the good shit. Now listen. I want to know, was it love at first sight? Was it like, did you hear bells go off? You know, I want to know everything.
The first time we saw each other was in a Denny's. Because he and I had been, like, she gave each other, gave each of us, like, our online screen names or some shit. I forget. And he and I had started messaging before I ever went to one of the meetings for their group. And I invited him out one night to come meet me and my friends at this Denny's that we all used to go to. And so that was the first time we met. He had hair then, which is really funny. And he wore a black trench coat and long pointy rings on his fingers because he was just gotten done doing his bachelor's in fine arts at Rowan.
Yeah.
And was like super into like really creepy and dangerous jewelry.
Well, I made the jewelry.
So we started hanging out then, and then also discovered a very strong mutual love for horror movies. A lot of the same horror movies, and kind of got into it like that. The witchcraft thing was kind of incidental for a really long time.
Oh, yeah, well, that's the thing. We didn't even practice together for most of that period, like most of those 17.
Because he was like super into Wicca.
Like 14 years, we didn't really practice together.
Right, right. He was super into Wicca, and I was not. For a long part of our relationship, I was involved with Haitian voodoo. And he was pursuing like Gardnerian, and we both had a mutual love for chaos magic, which I think is where we kind of met in the middle with all of this. And we've only been practicing together for like 5-6 years.
Yeah, about that.
Time where we both kind of are awakenings from our respective paths, you know, where we kind of dead ended on our own, like pursuing our own paths. And kind of said, all right, well, what can we do now?
Right.
Took all of our influences and our backgrounds and the things that we liked and the things that we learned and the things that we hated and put them together into like this weird little twisted baby that's Black Tree. So it's like now we practice together. Now it's all we freaking talk about.
The reason why this is fascinating to me is because I know very few couples who practice together. And part of my continuous struggle, I shouldn't even say it's a struggle. I guess I used to think of it as a struggle. Like, I've been married 3 times. My first husband was also Wiccan. And that marriage fell apart very quickly, like 4 months in, boom, bye, because he used to we used to call him the cherry picker. If there was a virgin around, he would remedy that situation. So that didn't last. And I was never married to another person in the same path. So I love talking to folks that are couples that practice together, because for me, in my experience, and I've been a practicing Gardnerian for the last 45 years. And I've never had another partner who practiced with me. So I just love talking to couples that are like, we do this together. And I'm like, I love that. That makes me so happy.
I mean, it's totally mine and Chris's relationship is very democratic. We talk everything out from all different angles because we're both very stubborn people. We both are very strongly opinionated people.
I don't agree with that.
And very principled people. And but also we're not foolish. And
right.
You know, we've been together for, you know, it's going on 19 years now. So we've learned some stuff about each other too. Like the two of us have been through so much on an individual level in the time that we've been together. Like
I've
taken care of two family members through cancer into death. We entered into a relationship. I was just turning 30, you know, like, and he wasn't even yet. That came a couple of years behind. And so like, we've gone through all of these changes and career changes and life changes and grown together instead of grown away from each other. And I think part of that is because of the constant democratic, we have to talk about whatever it is. And like, if somebody has a really strongly held opinion and the other one has the opposite opinion, if you can poke enough holes in it, then the other one will then go, okay, compromise. And like, so we're smart about it too. I mean, granted, there's some arguments that are just minefields that we just don't go into anymore. Like the topic of Typo Negative or Rush being really shitty bands. But
I'm with you. I'm with the Rush being a shitty band. I'm sorry, I'm on Team Anti-Rush. Got to tell you. But that's me. See, now, here's the thing that I find really interesting. Like, you've written this great book, but, and it's a, you know, and it's about witchcraft. Fantastic. But what I find really fascinating is your approach to relationships and your I'm not even kidding. I'm really serious. I need a book about how to do what you do and have the discussion, because every time I find this in most relationships, you usually have a person who is a lot stronger in some regards than the other person, and somebody always acquiesces. And I think your approach is so much better because you are giving equal amounts of credence to both voices until you get to a point where, okay, this is not going to change here, let's compromise here. Normally, somebody gives up way before that happens. So I'm like, I'm sorry?
I was gonna say I mean, I don't know. I'm not a counselor or anything, so I really hate giving any kind of relationship advice. But I think it's just rooted in honesty, like and realizing that no one's perfect, and that goes for myself, that goes for her. She recognizes that she's not perfect. She recognizes that I'm not perfect, and vice versa. Sometimes someone calls the shots. Sometimes someone allows the other person to just fine make the decisions.
Right.
Sometimes it's a debate. You know.
Sometimes we have to do. Rock, paper, scissors to make a decision, because one of us wants to make the decision.
I mean, we've done rock, paper, scissors. When it comes down to eating establishments, we do
5-2-1.
5-2-1, which is one person makes five suggestions, the other person picks two from the five, and then the other person takes one from the two.
That's awesome.
Like stuff like that.
I need to
constant
discussion of. Well, what do you want to do? Even with family members, well, you make the decision. No, you make the decision. And inevitably, somebody will make it, like, they'll ask me, what do you want to do? And I'll be like, oh, I don't care. And then they'll make a suggestion, and I'll be like, I don't want to do that. So I'm an asshole all the time.
So, now it's like, here's five that I am willing to entertain going to. You pick two out of that five, and I'll pick one out of that two, and then we'll work it out somewhere. And that's worked out pretty well.
Yeah, that's a good trick that we've done. And I mean, honestly, like, the fact that we were able to write a book together says a lot, I think.
And that's the relationship lived through it.
Because, I mean, honestly, the book there was really cut down the middle. There were chapters that I wrote. There were chapters that Tara wrote. there were chapters that we both wrote.
But then,
even the
chapters where it's like herbalism is just me, right? But you still went through that chapter and changed things in the voice so that the voices became merged. And I did the same thing with you, like in the necromancy chapter, for instance. And it was stuff like that. Like, there were so many times that we read through that draft and made edits so many times just between the two of us before we even sent it out into the world to Wiser, that we went over it so many times back and forth that now we're not sure who made what choice. I mean, there's really definitive ones where, like, I just know I came up with that turn of phrase.
And then there's the copy editor.
And then there's the copy editor going through it. So, like, our voices got so blended and merged into that.
Yeah. And we'll often hear people say, oh, I can tell where Tara is. And it's been like, no,
yeah,
you can't.
Only in, like,
no, you can't.
In the lunar chapter, yeah. When I'm going through the months, that's pure, that's praxis and lore from the coven. So that's purely me in the months part. And then you went through some of herbalism and changed wording here and there. Like, you can't go up against the knowledge, but we can go up against the wording.
I wrote all the incantations and I did all the rituals and all that stuff. Mm-hmm.
So we just kind of sit and laugh when people say it.
How long did it take you to write it?
9 months.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That's it?
Holy,
writing it in your sleep too? I mean, that's pretty quick.
I mean, it seemed like forever, because there was a period where Judica Illis had approached Chris and said, hey, I really love your blog. Do you have an idea for a book? And he was like, do I? And then it turned into this whole thing with he and I writing it, because at the same time we were developing Black Tree on our own anyway. So I got to be in it, and we learned how to submit like the book proposal itself, and you had to write two chapters. And right as all of that was happening was when my brother had gotten diagnosed with kidney cancer, and I was his caretaker, and we went through this whole time period where I just kind of like dropped out of the world because I was taking care of him. And there were points in that where Chris was working on the proposal chapters, like sitting on the floor in my brother's living room, leaning up, like propped up against his hospital bed, typing them into freaking notepad on his iPhone. And then, like, after my brother had passed away, I had a few months where I was pulling all of my shit together, and then I dove back into it and we finished the proposal. The proposal was only like out on the table with Wiser for a short period of time before we then jumped into, okay, how long until you can produce this book, which was the 9 months that it took us, because we wound up having to like totally change the beginning of how we had written it. So it was about 9 months from like hard start to hard finish.
Yeah, I mean, that's just going off the top of, I mean, my head. That's about how long it took. But I'd really need to lay it all out chronologically, honestly. Like, if I had to figure it out. Like, because there was such a delay between submitting the first draft and then getting the first round of edits back, because there were things happening, I guess, with Wiser. And just, you know, because they're juggling so many authors all at once.
Yeah.
And then once we got the first round of edits back, it was go time, because we had to turn it in. And so it's just the last couple of years, they're all just kind of mushed together in my brain.
Well, we have holes in our brains from writing it. Like, that's the thing that no one tells you, is you develop holes in the brain when you write a book.
I know. Speaking of the book, tell us a little bit more about it. And I don't know how to pronounce this word. Is it Besom? I know it means
Besom. Yeah, we say Besom. We've heard several pronunciations of it. So I think it's kind of like almost a regional.
Besom,
but we
Besom,
say Besom.
Besom.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the book grew out of it's such a weird journey, because like at the time when the book started peeking out of my brain, I had already sculpted the Witchlord statue. And a lot of this stuff started just coming around for me, which was the ideas about quote unquote traditional witchcraft, which is such an odd label, but that's just what people call it. And the ideas surrounding it, and knowing that, you know, Wicca is rooted in 19th century occultism. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that either, but it's like, okay, so if people are looking at history in a very different way and trying to have a new understanding of what witchcraft might have been, I want to be on that bandwagon. Like, I want to get on that because that's what I'm interested in. So I went and pursued that, and it was just from those interests and working with Tara and just trying to figure out how it all functions and really what witch, in our opinion, what witchcraft was and where the witchcraft starts and where the witchcraft ends rather, and where the paganism starts and all that kind of stuff. And pretty much just getting that understanding under control, and how the animism and the ideas surrounding animism work into traditional witchcraft, like context. And, you know, cause I had a very, you know, Wicca background, ceremonial magic background, you know, 19th century occultism, calling quarters, summoning elements, that whole thing. So it was kind of like, well, how is traditional witchcraft different? Is it different? And what is it? And that kind of was a part of the journey for me. And I really honestly feel it is a different animal. It's not that it's better. And I say this every single time I get on this topic. It's not that it's better. It's just that it is honestly just a thing. It has a different idea behind it. There's a different intent to what you do. Maybe from an outsider perspective, like a Wiccan looking at a traditional witchcraft ritual would just see the same thing, but not realizing that the ideas and the methodology and the reason for doing things is vastly different. So in a sense, the ritual technology gets different too. You know, perfect example is the, for lack of a better term, the ritual space. You know, like there's the laying of the compass versus casting a circle. They might look the same, but the ideas are very different there.
And what they're doing is different.
And what they're doing is different, yeah. Because in Wicca, the idea of casting a circle is oftentimes thought of as being this magical bubble that is an energy barrier. So, but in traditional witchcraft, because it's very shamanistic in its core, and Wicca tends to be very ceremonial at its core. You know, that, like I said, it's very much rooted 18th century occultism. So it has a very ceremonial base to it, a very hermetic base. But traditional witchcraft has more of a shamanistic base. And not that both paths don't share things, but the roots of them are vastly different. So in Wicca, you have the casting of the circle, which is like that magical space that is an energy barrier and a protector. It functions a lot like a fortress. You know, you are summoning watchtowers. You know, it's a fortress. But in traditional witchcraft, the laying of the compass is pretty much you're claiming the ground that you're standing on in a physical sense, not in a symbolic sense where there's a lot of visualization and things like that. You are literally just claiming the ground that you're standing on because you want to journey above or below to the different worlds in that spot. So like the compass kind of holds that place for you so you can leave and come back to, kind of like a helicopter landing pad. So like a cast circle is like a fortress. Compass is like an elevator.
It's like a save point.
It's a safe point, So like,
I like that.
Just different ideas.
It confers zero protection too. Like we're not like banishing spirits from the area or anything. It is purely creating this place.
Yeah, but it can also be combined with some of the warring techniques. But it's not necessary because, you know, you have to leave the circle sometime. You know, so like you banish a spirit, you have to leave that circle sometime. So it's kind of like we more so rely, for any warding things, we more so rely on jewelry and tattoos and maybe like blessings with oil, you know, stuff like that that's more permanent and things that you carry with you outside of the space. And we don't necessarily rely on the ritual space to be a protective space for magical purposes.
See, but even as a gardnerian, which is how I was raised, I do the other things too. Like I use jewelry as my protection, and when, you know, I do leave circle, because as you say, everybody's got to leave circle some point because people got to key and earn a living. Just saying. But am I incorporating the traditional and the ceremonial unwittingly? Is there a problem that I'm doing that?
It is what it is.
I wasn't sure if that was a question or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
No, I don't there's a there would ever be a problem. I mean, there's very little things you can honestly do wrong in this stuff. That's what I've learned.
Okay.
You know, a lot of people get caught up in formality, and that's one of the reasons why in the book all the rituals are different and they interchange different technologies, and we did that on purpose because we wanted to show people that there's more than one way to practice. And it's kind of like why we have the ritual space and the ritual working space in the very beginning of the book. But then during the lunar chapter towards the end, we say, well, if you want, you can just pile it all in the one spot.
And it's cool.
It's to show that there's different ways that this can be done. Mm-hmm. And you can adapt all this stuff to your own interests and your own lives.
One of the things that we always liked from Peter Padden, I think he had said it on his podcast one day. He had said, if the question is A or B, the answer is yes. Is it A or is it B? Answer is yes. And we really took that to heart with it. And it also has its little flavor of chaos magic in there too. Mm-hmm. Like it has its glint of it. And I absolutely feel that Peter would have agreed with that. It has that ability to shift your paradigm, to shift your mindset, so that you can accept that you don't need to do necessarily the fancy dancing, as Deborah Castellano calls it. I am absolutely on the no fancy dance side. You don't have to do those things. It's great to do them, but it doesn't have to be Thanksgiving every full moon. You know, you can do a strip down thing. Sometimes you can't do the full thing for X, Y, and Z reasons. So, We make that very much a spine of our practice.
Yeah, the spontaneity and going with the flow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like that.
It's all more so, I think the inspiration is more important than the formalization of ritual. You know, the inspiration that's behind it. And, you know, sometimes you're just not into doing it, like Tara was saying, in a very formal way. To get you to that point of inspiration, I think that's really where you need to get.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you need the fancy dancing. Sometimes you don't need the fancy dancing. Sometimes you need the fancy ritual tools. Sometimes your index finger is good enough.
Yep.
I do a lot with my index finger, and I actually have fancy shit too. But it's like, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm older now. Or I'm just fucking tired all the time. I mean, you know, I already have a day job. How much shit do I have to fucking remember to, you know, practice my path? It's like this points just as well as my knife. And I'm looking at my finger. I'm looking at my finger like you can see what the hell I'm doing. I'm looking at my finger. But, you know, sometimes when I want to cast a circle, I'll take my knife and swing it over my head three times. I mean, I love the fact that, you know, I love tradition. I do. But by the same token, I think some people are so married to this whatever one concept they have that it totally blinds them to the possibility of maybe not making it so difficult or not making it so fucking exclusive. I mean, excuse my French, but people are just assholes. A lot of them. Sure or not.
Yeah.
So I like the idea that you guys are not like, it doesn't have to be exactly this way, you know? And I find that a lot of writers now are accepting this idea of, oh, no, you don't have to, like, you know, stand on one foot and spit three times in the West and, you know, call your mother on Sunday, whatever it is, you know, and that there are other ways to do the same thing without everybody looking like they're in a cult.
Right. Like, we drilled our focus down to say, what is witchcraft? Like, when you distill witchcraft down to its very essence and you completely remove all of its cultural trappings and regional differences and, you know, this part of the world does it this way and this part of the world considers it this way. When you strip all of that down and you take from it, you figure out what signs are making this witchcraft in each of these practices, and you distill it down. And I've mentioned it before. It's kind of like when you look at the periodic chart and you look at what an element is and you distill it down to its very barest essence, its very barest molecule. And that's where we got the six paths. Those six paths are what comprises witchcraft at their crux. And mm-hmm. once you have that and you look at it from that perspective, you can then add whatever of your old other cultural trappings as needed or not at all. So that includes any deity work. Because all the newbie witches get so bogged down with, I don't know what pantheon to pick. Like it's a new pair of shoes for the school season. It's you don't need it. You can have it. It's great to have it. It's wonderful to have it. But you don't necessarily right. need it. And you can carve out your own way using witchcraft as a practice rather than as a religion until at mm-hmm. least maybe figure out, get your feet under you, and then decide whether or not you want to go in the religious realm, or if you just want to stay out of it completely and just be a dirt witch, you know, and get like that, be swamp witch.
Yay, swamp witch.
And I think that was something that was missing from a lot of the practices that are really out there. Almost all the books that I see people talk about picking up as their first witchcraft books, one of the first things it says in there is to figure out what God calls to you and then start working with them. And that always left me cold as a baby witch. Was never a fan of that.
Well, I mean, I honestly think, to kind of go back to what you were saying, Raina, I think some people honestly need to be told what to do,
stand here
how to
visit.
Think.
Yeah.
They don't have enough confidence in themselves to make those decisions because it's not good enough, because it's not coming from outside of them. A lot of us have been raised in environments where truth and quote unquote what is real is being told to us by someone else, by some authority, by some outside figure.
And a lot of
those same people, they're afraid to just come to their own conclusions and to realize, you know what? I don't think Jesus was a thing. I think that's just a story that got made up, and there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, like, some people aren't able to come to these realizations and to forge their own path. They need someone else to tell them what's real, what's right, and what's wrong. And I think that's where we get the, you know, this one-way-ism with witchcraft. I think it perfectly stems from the zealotry that has founded the tree. You know, I mean, not to quote John Michael Greer, you know, that the country by zealots. We still suffer from that. Everyone needs to be it's a logical
disease. I'm sorry, go ahead. You first.
Mm-mm, no, he was done.
Yeah, I was done.
I'm not trying to negate the importance of needing guidance. Because, you know, when you are first starting out, there should be a structure of some sort so that you're not doing things willy-nilly and potentially hurting yourself. Because I made lots of mistakes, because back in my day, there were very few writers. And there was limited access, because when I was coming up, there was no internet. You know, there was Sybil Leek, and there was Raymond Buckland, and there was Patricia Crowther, and the Farrars. I mean, there was limited access, there were limited people out there who were actually doing this. So in my day, you know, I had limited resources of who I could at least follow until I had my first mentor. Because my first mentor wouldn't even take me on until, I mean, I asked for an initiation at 16, and he looked at me and laughed. Okay, and he was like, you don't know what you're asking for. And I'm like, I want to be a witch. And he's like, yeah, sure you do. And I did 12 years of service before I was initiated, because he didn't suffer fools gladly. And he wanted to know I was serious. And I fell in with that because that was what was presented to me as my path. So, you know, I did what I was instructed to do. Now, it doesn't happen that way for everybody, obviously. And now, with all the information that's out there, it's a lot easier to, like, you know, gather lots of information and have a jumping point. But I think, and I hate to fall into the boomer thing, because I actually am a boomer. Well, I mean, I am. I'm almost 60 years old.
Well, just for the record, we're Gen Xers.
Gen X.
So.
Yeah,
there
me
you
too.
So is my sister. I mean, you guys are all
Gen
Xers, and yeah, I mean, and that's fine. And I do find that a lot of boomers are complete fucking assholes. Agreed.
You got assholes in every group.
Yeah, but it just seems, but it seems to be a lot of the, you know, absolutism comes from older people. It just does. And
yeah.
You know what? If you have a specific thing that you believe and you don't accept that other things are also valid, that is perfectly your right to think that in your head. Just stop being a
yeah.
jerk publicly about it. I mean, because everyone is allowed to think what they want to think. It's how you present it or infect it on or affect it on other people that's the problem. So I don't mind
yeah.
that there are people who say it's my way. That's fine, and you can think that, but the rest of us don't have to follow your bullshit. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah. But that's the beauty of tradition, too. This sounds like
yeah.
an argument. I'm not arguing, you know, but that's the beauty of tradition. It's that people don't realize
yeah.
why tradition exists, and it's so that you can learn about the mysteries that that tradition provides, and the only reason, only way that you get that understanding is by doing
yeah.
things in a very particular way, accustomed to that tradition. It doesn't make doing something else wrong. It just means you're not going to get the message.
You're not doing that kind.
You're not going
yeah.
to get the message that's being conveyed.
Yeah. I just, you know, I didn't have a particular, you know, I mean, and it was mentioned to me when I was very young, you know, you should pick a pantheon. And I'm like, why? I don't wanna. So
yeah.
I didn't. You know, I mean, because if you believe, I mean, some people are like, well, you know, the god and the goddess are, you know, multifaceted things, and you know, they're different names, they're just different parts of them, and that's kind of where I went with it. So when I wanted, you know, the energy of Hera, or if I wanted the energy of Gaia, or if I wanted the energy of Venus, I mean, you know what I mean? That's just where I would go. I never felt like I had to ignore Isis in favor of something else. Do you know what I mean? So I like the idea that you don't have to say, okay, these are the ones I follow and no others. You know, it's a very, to me, that's a very Christian attitude when it's like, I only follow this and nothing else, you know?
Hmm.
So I think
you got very quiet with me.
No, I was
huh?
listening.
Yeah.
Jump in.
Well, you know, and so like writing this book and setting this up, we knew that, at least I felt that we had to give some things for people to identify with, you know, so we have like the ritual space there.
Yeah.
And even like, the ideas of the witch lord and the witch queen, which we constantly express to people, they are not deities. Do not treat them like they're deities. And
mm-hmm.
everyone, so many people argue with us about that. And it's like, if you treat them like deities, and that's fine if anyone wants to do that. But when you treat something like a deity, you are becoming submissive of it. You are stepping beneath it. And the idea of witchcraft that we like to present is a path of sovereignty. So,
oh, I love
you know,
that.
And then a lot of people will say, well, me and my deities are equal. Me and my gods are equal. I approach them as equals. So I'm like, okay. So that either means one of two things. Either they're not a god or you are.
Yeah.
So the idea of a deity, the idea of a deity and God, that is a title that we give something. We can take
yeah,
that back.
That's true. I like
that is an honor.
Yeah. That's interesting. Wow. That gives me a lot to think about, actually.
Yeah, I like that.
But, I mean, gods are, and I've gotten pushback from people about this before, but gods to me are very much just hopped up tulpas. Like they've been created by humans. There are gods that are gone that we will never know because the humans that dreamt them up are gone. You know, just thousands of forgotten gods that we will never know. So they're not magically living on a hill somewhere in Greece. Like, and that's also not to say that I don't think that there aren't anthropomorphic versions of these gods. Like my thoughts on deities go pretty off the charts sometimes. I just don't like to work with them necessarily. It doesn't mean that I don't believe that they're out there. I'm just not into it.
You're very Terry Pratchett.
I'm very Terry Pratchett about it. I'm just like, no, I'm not going to start believing in them. It gives them ideas. I don't want the attachments to them. I don't want the responsibilities. Yeah. I don't want their bullshit. Like, I don't want any of that. Leave me alone. I'll stay with my tiny spirits over here and everything will be fine. But they're purely created by humans. Like, without us, they're not here. The witch lord and the witch, the way that I view them, are they are masks that have been put on to primordial land spirits that would exist regardless of humanity. Well, the masks exist because of humanity, but the primordial land spirit exists as long as there's land and as long as there is death. They go that below it all. It's like the ancestor of the land. So we're looking at them as the witch lord, the witch queen. They have these faces, but that's the face that Chris put on them. That's not, it's just the version of it that's now been created. So something like that, when we're gone, yes, the vision that is called the witch lord, the witch queen will leave to a certain extent as well. But the spirits that are beneath that won't.
Yeah.
They'll remain as long as the world, as long as the land itself remains. And we also don't come to them in like supplication. We don't bring them offerings of things. We don't work with them in the way that somebody works with a deity necessarily. We don't pray to them or do things like that. They'll occasionally get offerings. You know, they have their times of the year that we've associated with them for fancy dancing purposes. But somebody in Blacktree could have a kind of passing relationship with both of them. I do. I'm not as into working with those as Chris is, but they're there in my practice because they're there in my practice.
But also they those in particular, they tend to be placeholders.
Mm-hmm.
So like, because we're in South Jersey, we have the Jersey Devil. And we have the mother of the Jersey Devils. Tap into those because we have something a little bit more specific to work with.
Yeah.
But in general, you have the Witch Lord and the Witch Queen, which are these primordial archetypes.
Mm-hmm.
But the other idea behind the book is we wanted to be able to show people how to practice in a way that allows them to tap into the land that they live on and to kind of get them away from, and this is obviously me just talking out my ass, but because I have opinions, this is one of them.
Right.
I think a lot of people are focused on ancient lands and ancient cultures and ancient deities, and they're forgetting the present, the here and the now in their own backyard. And
that's
we're
so
trying to give people to tap into that. And one of the ways is through folklore. And, you know, a lot of people talk about folklore and how it influences witchcraft, but they don't actually tell you how. And we present the idea that folklore and the stories of the land are expressions of the land itself that come through the people who live there. So if you can observe something like that and think about it, that this is a manifestation of the land that you're on. It's another way of tapping into it. Because, you know, if you're going to go do housework, if you're going to vacuum, you don't plug your vacuum in down the street. You plug it into the outlet that's right nearby.
Damn.
So, you know,
point.
let's get away from this idea of being focused on these things that are miles and miles and miles over away beyond an ocean from hundreds and hundreds of years ago, focused and rooted in an antiquated worldview. Let's find out how we believe the world exists here and now.
I was actually born in North Jersey, Livingston, actually. And for the first 3 years of my life, I lived in, I think it was East Hanover, where my dad grew up. But I do have to say the energy of New Jersey is much easier to work with because there's a lot more of it. And I don't know if it's because it's such a condensed state that, I mean, there's a lot of people. People have no idea how many people are actually in New Jersey. There's a lot of people.
One of the most densely populated states.
One of the most densely populated states in the country. We also have, like, some of the biggest differences in land itself. Like, we have the coast.
Yeah.
We have swamps. We have deciduous forests. We have mountains in North Jersey. We have, you know, inner coast type of arrangement. So our weather patterns also get real fucking fun. But like the land itself, because we're surrounded by water, and where there's water, there are spirits, and the land itself is very, very, very spirit haunted. Every part of this state has stories about ghosts in that town, or urban legends that have been told for 100 years or so, or you go down this street and turn your car lights off and honk and put it in neutral, and little ghost kids will come and push you through the intersection. We have, like, our own magazine. We were the first state to have a weird magazine. Weird New Jersey started that trend because there's so much weird shit in this state. And my biggest knee-jerk reaction whenever someone's like, oh, you're from Jersey, and I'm like, yeah, and they're like, oh, Jersey, and I just want to punch them right in the face.
Don't say it that way.
That is not, it's not what the state is. We're not landfills in the Jersey Shore and all of that bullshit. Those are things that aren't actually from this state. And it's, I mean, it's not utopia to live here, but at the same time, like, people ask Chris and I, well, what would you do if you had to move to another state? How would your practice change? And we are both completely flummoxed by that.
Well, I don't think it'll change all that much, but
I think a lot more of it would change than we realize, just because we've only ever known this area.
If you're tapped into the land, like I'm from the other side of the bridge. That's where I was born and raised. So, I mean, my practice in New York is a lot different from the practice I did in the Appalachians, which is a lot different from my practice now in the city of Charlotte, and we're in North Carolina. So, it's definitely – because the energy is different, period, no matter where you're moving to. If you're used to a certain thing, you're going to feel the shift the minute you're not there and you try to practice, whatever it is.
Some of the places that I've been to that have been very unlike our area, I always have difficulty being in for extended periods of time. I get very uncomfortable. Like, we had to go to... Lewistown in the beginning of 2018 when our friend Sarah died. And Lewistown in Pennsylvania is like the hills of Pennsylvania, not quite the mountainous part yet. Sarah's dedicated book to. And we had gone to Lewistown to, you know, finish everything after she had died. And her apartment was, you could see the hills from there. They were like right there. And the entire time we were there, I had just like this feeling from the land, and I remember the shift as it happened when we were driving there. And then I remember the shift away from it. We were coming home, and like it was like this point where I could just feel water over my head. Like, just something was closing over me. And I feel the same thing when we shift into the areas in New Jersey that now go over the Pine Barrens. Like, I know that line. I can tell with my eyes shut ever since I was a kid. But I, years ago, I had gone out to Las Vegas. My friends of mine were renewing their wedding vows, and I was going there with them. And the first night in Las Vegas, I had like a freak out because of the land.
Oh.
And because of the energy around me and everything going on. Like, I'm not a casino person at all. Like, I wasn't in any of that stuff. But just from the point of, like, landing at the airport to the hotel, walking the brief part of the hotel into our room, like, I don't even want to – I don't think I could describe the feeling that came over me. My left arm was numb all weekend.
Oh, my God.
Like, it was just, wow. I don't know. Being in the desert, I'm really unsure of. Like, the further you get me away from water, the unhappier I am.
Yeah.
So I think I need to be in a coastal state to begin with. But,
I did a year in Nevada, and it is like being on Mars. And I don't have any intention on ever being on Mars again. I need trees. I need water.
Yeah.
It is literally a desert in more than one way. So I'm totally feeling what you're saying, because I did that for a year, and oh boy, I don't ever want to feel that way again. It was horrible.
And then on top of it, in Vegas, you have the egregore of Vegas, you know, and just all of that energy and psych. Condensed in one place, and that's a fun place.
It has a weird feeling to it. I only went like once, and that was like just before I left California, and it was just I was glad we were staying in a hotel like outside of the city, because I mean, just walking through there, I really did not want to go back the second day.
Yeah.
When you have that kind of energy condensed, there's a certain amount of desperation, because it's a very transitory place as a state in and of itself. When you have that kind of energy, that impermanence and desperation and anger and fear, because look at what their industry is. It's all a big question mark. Very few people ever settle there to live there permanently, from what I found in the year that I was there. So when you have that kind of energy being pervasive, it's going to reach you no matter how you try to insulate yourself. So it's going to affect your, you know, it's going to affect you emotionally and physically. Even if you think you can block yourself against it, it creeps in and it changes how you practice whatever it is you're practicing, because you're trying to overcompensate for the negativity that you're getting that's just permeating the whole state. And it's like that no matter where you go, you're going to be affected by whatever the prevailing energy is, I think. That's my experience. May not be everybody's, but that's my experience.
I would agree.
I would agree too.
But I just, you know, I'm fascinated by how we react to different levels of energy, how we react to people who practice differently. You know, that's why I love the fact that there's, I mean, I hate the conversation about gatekeeping, because it kind of makes me nuts, because, again, it's like my way or the highway. And I find that very distressing, as I'm sure you guys do. Because what you've written is not very my way or the highway. As a matter of fact, it's kind of like, no. A lot of the stuff you've been told is bullshit, which I kind of like. I like that.
And then we also always add the caveat, like, if you don't believe us, fuck it. You know, do whatever you want, man.
Yeah.
Do it over there.
Well, I think a lot of people are just get very upset when you try to like stand in the quote unquote, now please no air quote heavy, when you're trying to stand in the way of their free will. Listen, asshole, nobody is trying to stand in your precious way. If you don't have your shit together enough to control your own fucking destiny or your own fucking practice, then don't look at me like the bad guy. You're not taking care of your own shit.
Yep.
But it's also like when people, when they complain about the gatekeeping and then they turn it into a thing about initiated traditions without understanding, mm-hmm. like, okay, we have Black Tree, which is an initiatory tradition of witchcraft that we have created, right? Black mm-hmm. Tree is separate in and of itself from the book. So the book is kind of what we think of as witchcraft, and it has a Black Tree flavor to it. But to practice Black Tree witchcraft, you have to be in the coven.
Right.
And you get initiated into it. We're not saying that someone can't practice witchcraft. Like, go ahead and practice it in whatever way you feel. But if you say that you are practicing it as Black Tree or practicing it as Gardnerian or Alexandrian or whatever other lines of initiatory witchcraft, that is a different story entirely. Those are more like private clubs within a thing as a whole. So someone, it's like you can't just declare yourself to be a Catholic priest. You can be a Catholic.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha. Exactly. Oh, yeah, totally. That's a great explanation of it. It's like, everybody can be a golfer, but not everybody can golf with Tiger Woods. Just saying.
Or not even that, but like not everybody can golf on a particular team. Because they're just not part of that team. You know, it's not saying that one is better than the other or one is more skilled. It's just this is one where we've all come together to practice under the way that we want to do it together.
I think that's like the idea of traditions and initiation and gatekeeping. I think they all have their place and they can all be abused. And gatekeeping is always talked about in a really poor light, but it's like if you don't want to circle with someone and you say that you don't want them there and you pull whatever strings or you have the authority to keep them from being there, that's gatekeeping. But at the same time, it's also group management. You know, like you can't just throw people in a group and expect everybody to get along. That's a recipe for disaster. You know, you have to work with the people that you want to work with. You're not being an asshole because you don't want to work with somebody. It's shitty and it hurts people's feelings. It does. But at the same time, do you want to self-destruct the group that you've been curating because you want to accommodate someone that you personally would rather not work with? No, that's idiotic. So like gatekeeping has a place.
Right.
But it can also be abused.
I think a lot of the time when people talk about gatekeeping in the negative fashion, they're talking about it as the people who are saying, oh, like these baby newbie witches, how dare they come into this through Sabrina, you know, the chilling adventures thereof.
But that's not gatekeeping.
That's being an asshole.
That's just being an asshole.
Right.
That's a good show, too. I like that show.
Oh, yeah. We're on our rewatch of it right now.
Oh, are you? I can't wait till the next season comes.
Yeah. Have to start.
Oh,
you haven't seen
time.
Any of them.
Oh, they're good. They are good.
Love it.
I mean, but you have to approach that because I know there was like a little bit of controversy with it, you know, because in the show they worship Satan, you know, and as always, we're always afraid of that connotation because that has no part of the craft. But if you take the show in the connotation of, you know, the comic book that was written way back when, that's what it's following.
Campiness of it all.
Yeah.
Like it's pure fiction.
It's just fun.
It's the same people who had a problem with The Witch, the movie.
Yeah.
It's like,
it's
not showing what your practice, what someone, you know, if it's a Wiccan that's complaining about it, it's not showing Wicca.
Right.
No one thinks it's showing. Those people who think it's showing Wicca are the people who aren't Wiccans. People who don't know about it. But like, the interesting thing about like film and television and all is that it really shows the percolation, the boiling points of culture. So we go from like this cutesy safe versions of witchcraft, and now we're getting into like darker representations of it, and it's mirroring the traditional witchcraft movement. You know, the whole anti-Satan thing that grew out of the Satanic Panic of the 80s. That's a complete byproduct of that.
Yeah.
That's all that is. That's people still being afraid. Well, the problem is that none of those Christians who have a problem, for example, that have a problem with you practicing witchcraft, don't give a fuck if you insist that you're not you're worshiping the devil. They don't give a shit. You're not going to be able to sit at their fucking table.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
You do what you want to do, whatever that is. Stop accommodating these jerk-offs.
There you
go. Agree. Agree.
Yeah.
Totally
correct. To
yeah.
We totally recognize, too, that we are very, very privileged in that we don't need to deal with...
Very much.
Very privileged in that we, Chris and I, don't have to deal with the outside world in that regard. We don't have children. You know, we're both fairly out, you know, so to speak. We use our real names on our work. Our work lives, it's kind of like just a thing that we don't talk about, but we don't talk about personal lives at work anyway. Our families know what we do. We don't have to deal with like a really negative community. You know, like we don't live in the Bible Belt. You know, we live 20
mm-hmm.
minutes outside of Philadelphia, Jersey, which is one of the more democratic states in the country. Like it's not a big deal for us, but we know that it is absolutely a big deal for other people.
Yeah. But we're also entering a time period where our understandings about witchcraft are changing,
mm-hmm.
and we're getting to a point where we can expand on these ideas. And that's kind of along the lines of what the book is about, too, because it's like, you know what? If we know that the Murray thesis was completely inaccurate and
mm-hmm.
that the origins of Hattie are questionable, these are the foundations of the modern movement. Foundations are sketchy. Do you live in that house that has a shaky foundation, or do you rebuild the house? We're rebuilding the house. So we're interested in what it may have been, what it could have been.
What it's going to be.
What it's going to be, exploring all these different ideas and how they fit into a modern context, getting rid of the stuff that doesn't add up. I mean, it might work, and that's great, and that's something to take note of. But if we're not fundamentalistly rooted in history, because
mm-hmm.
we're never going to be someone from like 1,000 years ago because we live in 2019. You know, I think history is great to get an idea of how things were. And our idea or our desire is to see what happened, consider what happened, find out how it fits into the modern context and how it works in a modern context. Because at some point you're going to, being so strict on history, you're going to get to a point where you don't have the answers anymore and you have to accept the fact that you have to make your own shit up.
Or you get
and that's just
focused on minutia.
On minutia, yeah.
And then take all the blood out of it.
Sorry, that's a bit of a ranter there on the...
Maybe you should be on a show to talk about it.
Maybe sometime. I should. Maybe I should start a podcast and write a book about it.
Speaking of shows, we will definitely have you back to expand on that, because I just looked at the time. We're down to like 3 minutes. That went by so fast.
So talk about the book again. Tell people where to buy it and what you're working on next before we run out of time.
Okay. The book is called Besom, Stang, and Sword, A Guide to Traditional Witchcraft, The Sixfold Path, and The Hidden Landscape. It is available wherever books are sold. You can find us online at infinite-beyond.com. Our podcast is called Down at the Crossroads, and it can be found anywhere that podcasts can be found.
Links on our page.
What's that?
Links are on our page.
Links on our page. We will also be at Between the Worlds next year, Between the Worlds
nice.
And Sacred Space.
And we'll,
be at Free Spirit Gathering in the summer.
Yay.
Nice. Awesome.
Next book. Are we working on something else together?
Oh, yeah.
There's always stuff that we're working on.
We have a bunch of book ideas. Nothing is formal yet. We have no contract signed or anything like that.
But we have ideas for stuff for us to do together, and then we have ideas for stuff to do written on our own. So
awesome.
That's awesome.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
all
thank
right,
you very
guys,
much.
So much for coming on. This has been an awesome show.
Chris Arapello and Tara Love McGuire, thank you so much. I will be in touch in the next 10 minutes to rebook you. So thank you again for coming on. This has been such fun.
Thank you. Have a great
day. Take care.
You too. Thank you so much. Oh, that was so much fun. Okay, I got to wrap us up real quick.
Rip
so, Yeah, because we're about 30 seconds. So we love you guys. We hope you have an awesome weekend and a happy Thanksgiving if you're in America celebrating, or if you're in another country celebrating. We hope you get your fill. And I plan on hoovering my way over to Sisters at some point. But
yes.
We'll talk to you next week. Bye, guys.
Night, everybody.